That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
It's Brady and Walker for another week, 1-4, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360. My name's Greg Brady. Andrew Walker absent this week, and we're lucky enough to have Jeff Blair stick around after Baseball Central and prior to Primetime Sports at 4 o'clock. Yes.
He only takes off when big stuff happens. You notice that?
I was going to say, this summer, if it's been meaningful, Bob McCown hasn't been here and Andrew Walker hasn't been here. I don't know what that says.
I'm beginning to wonder about this.
I don't know what that means, but we're going to go.
Suspicious.
We're going to go to Cleveland, Ohio, and Progressive Field, still known to some as the Jake, where Mark Shapiro will speak. But what will he speak of? We've been told he won't. We were told early this morning during the Jeff Blair show with Ben Ennis, he won't address much about the Toronto Blue Jays scenario and the inevitable hiring of him as president. Yet he has to say something because he's saying something. Correct.
Well, and the Jays, I'm sorry, Rogers has sent out a news release that he is the president and CEO of the Blue Jays. So I can't imagine he's just going to go up there and say, "Hey, everybody, loved my time in Cleveland. I'm leaving for new challenges, and thanks everybody, and I'll see you later."
He's also the employee of the month. I find that really weird. Just to squeeze that, a lot of people worked really hard. Not you and I, but the first 30 days, and he gets it on the last day. Like if it was a 30-day month, he wouldn't get it. So let's talk about the intrigue of this first of all. We know about the, the romancing, if you will, in the offseason of Dan Duquette and Kenny Williams of the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Was Shapiro a name you would have thought of back then? He moved upstairs a few years ago, seemed very content as president, but the Indians haven't gone back to their big spending ways when he first got there. They haven't had a top 10 payroll.
Right.
Since going back to 2008, and they haven't had a top five payroll in 13 years now. They're one of the sort of light spenders in the game mm-hmm. now. This would be a difference for Mark Shapiro.
Yeah, you know, originally his name didn't come up, but
here we go.
We're going to Cleveland?
Yeah.
All right,
okay.
We'll go to Cleveland.
I'd love to know the answer to that. Let's get
I'll
some answers
later.
From Mark Shapiro, who sits down right now at Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio. Let's go there now.
So I did get a live notification from MLB.com before I walked up here to, you know, listen in live and hear Mark Shapiro talk about the Blue Jays CEO and president's job, but that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to talk about Cleveland. I'm here to talk about 24 years and, you know, a decision that I had to make and, you know, what's meaningful to me in that decision, which certainly a little bit is the opportunity going forward. But the majority of my remarks today and the answers to my questions are going to be more about, you know, the time I've had here. I'm going to, you know, just initially acknowledge my wife here, Lissa. You know, I've had opportunities before, but it's only because of her support and her belief that I could even consider this one. So I'm not going to look at her, but thanks to her and my kids for being so open to something so big, exciting, and new. Without them and their support, you know, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't even have had to consider it. Hard for me to believe, but about 24 years ago, a little less than that, my little brother and I loaded up a U-Haul truck, drove down Ontario Street, and I pointed out to David, you know, hey, that's where Jacobs Field is going to be. You know, there was one more building that got demoed the week I was in my plush temporary downtown housing, executive housing is how they sold it to me, you know, that I heard get demoed. And so began the construction of Jacobs Field. But more for me began an incredible juncture of my life marked by unbelievable relationships, marked by championships, marked by rings, and marked by celebrations. But really even more by friendships made and bonds that were created, both in this community and certainly, you know, within the organization and beyond. Those relationships, those bonds, are what made this decision so incredibly difficult and painful at times for me over the past weeks. The team, the community, the culture of this organization that I believe so incredibly deeply in, the values that brought this group of people together, that our team, you know, demonstrates on the field day to day, those are the things that kept me here through so many other junctures and alternatives in a lifetime in the profession of baseball. The opportunity to steward this organization and go forward doing that was not one that was unattractive to me. It was one that I enjoyed every single day I was here. The decision really came down to two things. One, just how compelling and unique the opportunity in Toronto is. I feel like throughout all of professional sports, this is one that fits my skill set. It fits what provides fulfillment for me on a daily basis. And when I think about who I am as a person, and for those of you that know me, I'm a lot about waking up every single day and wanting to be better, wanting to grow, wanting to develop. To do that, you have to be challenged. To do that, you have to take on new challenges and sometimes be a little uncomfortable. And, you know, this opportunity for me is the right challenge at the right time of our lives and of my life. And so it's with mixed emotions because of that history here and how I feel about Cleveland that, you know, I am also excited to take on, you know, this challenge and this opportunity. I feel good about the leadership in place, extremely good about it. It's a strong group of people who are mature, who understand the challenges in place and have committed both to the values that bond them together and to the strategies that are going to help them overcome those challenges. And most importantly, the challenge they're going to overcome in a way that's going to bring a championship to the city of Cleveland. I think that foundation's in place. And when that championship happens, regardless of where I am, believe me, I will celebrate with you. There'll be a piece of me that celebrates, you know, with this organization and with the city. You know, the city, our friendships, you know, that we shared, this organization, wherever I am, wherever I go, will always be a part of me. You know, 24 years does not get set aside. It becomes, you know, part of what you carry with you every single day. I met my wife here. We've raised our kids here. You know, I'll leave with this being part of my personal foundation and my professional foundation moving forward. Just a couple minutes to indulge me on a few thank yous. First to Larry Dolan, who's not here, and to Paul Dolan, who put tremendous confidence in me and provided me an opportunity to lead this organization at two of the highest levels at two different junctures. You know, I can't repay that, and I can't thank them enough for that. Secondly, the two gentlemen that, you know, are not here, John Hart and Dan O'Dowd. List of seven, we walked in. It doesn't seem like that long ago. We sat in this exact spot with the announcement that you'd be taking over the Indians from John the following season. You know, those two guys showed unbelievable confidence in me and empowered me to a level that, frankly, beyond explanation, beyond belief for a kid at that age. But from the time I was 24 years old and joined the organization, you know, I owe a lot of my professional development, but certainly owe my start in this game and in this organization to both John and Dan. Too many people in this organization to think about, and when I do, I will clearly not be able to answer questions or finish, from Johnny Gorel to the hundreds of people who have come through the building and left a lasting imprint on who I am as both a person and a professional. And then finally to Chris Antonetti, because I am both a better executive and a better man for having worked with him. So,
you're listening to Mark Shapiro. He's the new president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, 48 years old, leaves the Cleveland Indians after being there for 24 years. More questions and answers, and then we'll, of course, have on the Sportsnet main channels the Dave Steeb no-hitter 25th anniversary special on Sportsnet. Back to Cleveland, Ohio, Mark Shapiro, new Blue Jays president and CEO on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
First and foremost, is a sad day for me, as it is for my family and for our whole organization. But it should be understood that Mark leaves us with our blessing and our complete support. We wish him well and the best of luck, except, of course, when we're playing Toronto. And we're able to do this in part because Mark leaves us with an organization that is widely regarded throughout Major League Baseball as one of its strongest, which is probably why Toronto wanted Mark. But any strong organization is about more than the person at the top. And Mark has assembled, he's built a very, very strong leadership team that is very, very capable of taking this organization forward, which is why I will look to this team to lead the organization going forward. I will not look for external replacements for Mark, but rather, you know, I will take our time and settle on the best internal structure to run this team forward with complete confidence that this foundation that was laid by Mark will be the foundation upon which we can build a successful organization on and off the field. That's it.
Okay. Questions?
Hi, Tom. What are you most proud of? What's your proudest accomplishment?
That really is exactly half my life, isn't it? It's incredible. I think this is the people that I've had a part in playing some small part in their development, and just in their life experiences. I don't want to be, say that I played a huge role in their development, but just to think about the strength of the people that we've assembled over the years that have gone on elsewhere and that remain here, to think about how they've then cascaded their influence down, the strength of the values that bind those people together, the driving sense of urgency that we're going to wake up every day with the mandate to get better and improve and grow, and the understanding that we were going to do that in a culture where, credit and blame were not a part of it. And that no energy would be spent in those things. Those were inefficiencies. The universal understanding of that throughout the people that work here now and that have worked here in the past, I think more than any superficial accomplishments, awards or recognition, those relationships and those people are what I'm most proud of and will continue to be. JT.
Mark, how are you? Your biggest challenge working here, running this organization, what was that? And then on the more personal side, John Hart, can you go into a little bit more detail about what John Hart did to you?
Happily talk about John. The biggest challenge is probably just, the Major League Baseball system and how that relates to a market of Cleveland's size. So no one's fault, but I think the challenge is not, that dynamic. The challenge is not to ever let that be an excuse. The challenge is to create both a structure, a process for solving those challenges, and a group of people who don't readily fall back and rely on that as a reason why we can't win championships and be successful. So I would say that would be the overarching challenge. John, so many different things, JT, about him. Clearly, it has taken me different junctures in my career, and I've expressed this to him personally to recognize and be aware just how special the level of empowerment he gave me at such a young age was. From as simple a thing as kind of bringing me in when they handed me the farm system after only having worked a few years in professional baseball, and I told John my ideas for creating a development system and a planning process for players. To have him just go, hey, you're a guy. I got you. I'm with you. Let's go. A lifelong baseball guy who played and coached and was in a big league uniform as a coach. For him to tell me that and his belief in me, I think created both a platform for me to believe in others, and understand the power of that level of belief and empowerment. So John and Dan, really, Dan, the understanding of what level of preparation can be a difference maker and just high expectations and standards, clearly he had them. So those two guys together, they complemented each other well, and they both established a clear clear pathway for me to be a leader and did it at a level at an age that to me is, looking back, is remarkable. So I've tried to pay that forward every step of the way with the people we've hired here, and maybe even when I'm not directly involved with the hiring, I've tried to pay that forward in the understanding that every single person is important and that contributions can come from anywhere and that we're only good if they do come from everywhere. Hey, Bruce. Bruce, I'm remembering that interview and like the days in Winter Haven, Florida, with you. Like one of my first interviews as assistant GM right now. In the lounge. Remember? That's the first one. So.
Mark, close a couple of times in your career under John, then when you took over. Address for the fans the disappointment of not winning World Championship.
Yeah, I don't tend to dwell on those things. I mean, the only productive place that disappointment plays is fuel, you know, to move forward and accomplish those goals. So as I, you know, depart Cleveland, you know, regrets are not a big part of my life. They're not a big part of my vocabulary. You know, I think I leave here with a group of people who are going to, you know, end that disappointment and move the organization forward. And I believe that they'll do that. You know, that being said, there are plenty of times I wake up, think about 2007 and how close we were. I think Chris and I just talked about it the other day. And you know, you're like, you know, you know, and then you let it go because you got to move on. You got to move forward. And dwelling on that, unless there's something to learn from that, the next time you're there, dwelling on that is completely inefficient and non-productive.
Mark, when did these talks with Toronto start? Which side initiated them? And then,
Paul, what was your initial reaction?
I don't remember exact timing. You know, sometime probably in late July or something like that. But you know, they obviously called and asked permission, so I don't know. You know.
And you know, Mark and I have had a dialogue, you know, since the day he started in this role, and he said almost from the day he started that there would come a day when he sort of built an organization that he would no longer need to be part of. And so when he first brought up the idea that Toronto was an option for him, you know, we hadn't talked about it in a while, so I might have been a little surprised, but overall not surprised and very supportive of him.
Paul, could you talk about if you're taking over as team president, how will your duties change, and will you be involved in any baseball decisions?
I don't recall saying I would take over as team president. I'm not sure we'll fill that role, but de facto, Mark's direct reports will report to me as CEO and owner, and I'm not sure that will affect any real change other than, you know, I will do what I can to support our leadership team so that they can do their jobs. Mark, uniquely as a president, brought a great deal of baseball experience and knowledge, so I think he was a great advisor to Chris. I won't be able to play that role for Chris. If he needs help because of Mark's absence, he'll go out and get it.
He doesn't need any help.
Paul, could this have been a compensation type situation? And it's obviously not. Why wasn't it?
Why wasn't it a compensation? Maybe that's a better question posed to Mark, but I can tell you, Mark never raised compensation. He very well
comp from Toronto too.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. My relationship with Mark was such that he had the ability to do this when the time was right for him. It was not a compensation situation.
All right, there's Indian owner Paul Dolan talking about Mark Shapiro, who's leaving the organization after 24 years, over a decade as general manager. Greg Brady, Jeff Blair, back here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360. The other Sportsnets will show the Dave Steeb 25th anniversary of the no-hitter coming up on Sportsnet. So you'll see that on Ontario, East, West, Pacific, et cetera, et cetera. Don't forget, we've got a baseball team and a baseball game tonight. The Shapiro thing's interesting. When I lived in Detroit, obviously Cleveland was a lot more the focus of the AL Central, and they were dominating the AL Central for a long period of time. Shapiro didn't get as much credit, obviously, as general manager John Hart did, but did a lot of people see him as the next big thing as an executive? Clearly they did, and clearly he has proven a lot of that, winning MLB Executive of the Year twice.
Yeah, he's kind of an interesting guy because when Major League Baseball was looking for a replacement for Bud Selig, his name was kind of out there. I mean, it was never in the same level as Rob Manfred or even David Dombrowski. What you find in baseball is there are young executives who are kind of favored by the commissioner's office. Jerry Reinsdorf isn't young anymore, but, you know, he's an owner that Bud Selig used to rely on to help vet future owners, right? So it's almost like Bud would take guys out of each team, and this guy would be responsible for that. I mean, for the longest time, Stan Kasten was the guy. If you were building a new stadium, yeah, Stan Kasten would be your point man.
You remember John McHale was able to do that in a few organizations too, wasn't he?
And,
Troy, Colorado.
Andy yeah. McPhail, same thing. And Mark was kind of that mold. He was kind of a big picture guy. You know, he was a guy that people thought would eventually move into the commissioner's office and fill that type of a role. The thing is he's young, and this is what interests me. He's 48. He's saying all indications are he doesn't want to have a say necessarily in baseball operations, but we had Jim Rosenhaus, the Indians announcer on Baseball Central, and he said, you know, at the same time, Mark may want a little say in things. And I don't know how that's going to jibe with Alex Anthopoulos' responsibilities. That, to me, the big question with the Blue Jays is, what do you do, and be off the field? The big question is, how do you make the Rogers Center, if not better, how do you move it into its next phase? How do you fix up the Rogers Center so that you find new revenue streams that you need going forward? And his track record in Cleveland, okay, he's put a party patio up in the outfield.
Right.
But the Indians, I believe, are 29th in baseball and home attendance. So that's what I don't really get. He's not the type of guy that you would necessarily think at first blush, and I mean, let's give him a chance, but he's not the guy you would handpick to be the guy to start the discussion in Toronto about possibly a new stadium or major changes to the Rogers Center, because that's where this thing is going.
How much of him was the reason Terry Francona? Francona obviously has family roots with the tribe going way back decades. But you remember how hot a commodity was and how many vacancies. There's six or seven every year. Terry Francona could have waited out the Dodgers. He could have gone to a lot of different places. He could have even taken another year off, been in the broadcast booth and waited. Why did he choose Cleveland? What was attractive about the Indians at that point in time? Yes, he did make the wild card his first year there.
We should mention he has an opt-out clause that is triggered as soon as Shapiro leaves.
Right. So there's says right now he won't use it. But
yeah,
that's what he
just
said.
Just as
anybody's
Joe
gonna
Madden
say right
told
now.
People originally that he wasn't going to use it when Andrew Friedman left. The thing about Mark Shapiro, if you talk to people who worked for him, he is very loyal. He's not his background. His father was a longtime player agent. His background is a little different than a lot of people in the game. He doesn't need his guys. You know, he doesn't sort of come with a whole bag full of his guys. He can work with the guys that are already there. And it's interesting, you know, I can't remember who pointed this out. It might have even been John Heyman pointed out that with the turnover in the Indians front office from John Hart to him, the number of people who stayed or were promoted and sort of lived happily ever after is remarkable. So he is the type of guy who does engender a lot of loyalty on the part of people he worked with. I think he could work with Alex provided there's a clear delineation of responsibility.
I got a question about that. Jeff Blair is going to stay with us another few minutes. The Sportsnet mains are going to break right now, show the Dave Steeb 25th anniversary no-hitter 1:30. If you're watching on there, you can keep watching us on Sportsnet 360, obviously, and you're staying with us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we'll let the mains go, Sportsnet Ontario, etc. And, of course, Sportsnet 360 audience stays with us until 4 o'clock. Primetime Sports with Jeff Blair today, filling in for Bob McCown, is on at 4 o'clock as well. And they wanted me to mention Paul Beeston will be on your show right out of the gate at 4 o'clock. An exclusive chat with him as to, I know he was mentioned in the press release, in the news release earlier today. Yeah, I want to bring that up about Alex Anthopoulos because I would note the issue doesn't seem to me to be everyone yesterday when John Heyman broke this story and there was talk about it all weekend with the Tigers here wasn't necessarily, well, would Mark Shapiro want to keep Alex Anthopoulos? Alex has to decide for himself, is he a hot enough commodity, and are other organizations, and I don't want to go too deep into the names, but there may be, remember how the NHL had a lot of turnover with coaches? Everybody knew this was coming this year with Babcock and Bylsma waiting out. Is that going to be this kind of offseason, maybe, just maybe, for Major League Baseball general managers? Older guys like Jockety and Cincy, Hart in Atlanta, are there guys that want to either transition up or just say, I've had enough, and will those organizations look and say, we'd love to hire a 36-year-old who's turning everybody's head on its ear with with what he's done in Toronto.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because 2 years ago, I remember writing about how there was no turnover in the GM's ranks.
I mean, it was
the biggest period, and the numbers bore out that it was the most stable period in baseball history, certainly in the last 30 years for general managers. And now, of course, we've seen, I think there's half a dozen, seven openings. That's very simple. If the Jays don't move fast, whether it's Mark Shapiro, Edward Rogers, whoever's doing the negotiating, if they don't move fast and get Alex done, you know, Alex is certainly going to be in a position where he's going to be able to look around. And I don't know Alex well enough to say, oh, my God, he's got to stay in Toronto. I mean, I know he's happy here.
Yeah.
You know, he is Canadian. But who knows what, you know, who knows what it will take to turn his head? Who knows if somebody's prepared to do that?
When's he going to be hotter? The guys don't stay in one job their whole career in this kind of business. They don't. They often don't stay with one organization their whole career in the baseball business. This may be the chance of a lifetime for him.
And the other thing to keep in mind is there was kind of a rumor in this building. I want to say 3 years ago, maybe, that Keith Pelley, when he was president of Rogers Media, had kind of decided that Alex, he was going to try to mentor Alex and try to move Alex into a more business-oriented position once Beeston left. That he was effectively, that Keith Pelley looked at Alex as the next Paul Beeston, a guy he could keep around here. And we really don't know. Did Alex harbor ambitions about being the president of the team? Maybe Alex, after this year, will feel he's ready to move into a more business-oriented end of things. So it's an interesting hire. At face value, you've got to like Mark Shapiro. Again, he's, you know, everybody talks about what a great guy he is, able administrator. But, the timing is odd. The timing is odd. I will say that.
Yeah. And not necessarily with Cleveland here. Chris Antonetti and he had a long relationship before he was promoted to be general manager. And I mentioned that last night too. That takes a long time to build a working relationship, and they won't have always agreed on the right trade, the right call up, the right draft pick by their scouting department. But it's a 19-year relationship. And it's now him and Alex kind of become a little bit of a forced marriage. There's a little bit of, you know, where does this go in the kitchen? Where does this go in the lit? Like, there's going to be some housekeeping issues that take time, even if Alex stays, for them to work through.
And it's funny because I've been led to believe in the past that Alex and Mark Shapiro, that they talk, that Alex has sometimes bounced ideas off him. I've had people tell me this morning, you know, don't oversell that. Don't make it sound as if like he was a, you know, a primary mentor for Alex. So, yeah, I would think that relationship would have to take time to develop. And, you know, again, this is why the timing's so odd. It's September. There's a pennant race, you know, and I understand Alex's contract is up, I believe, the day after the season ends. But it's like, how do you develop that relationship in September during a pennant race? This is,
I'm sure you'll mention
timing
this.
Is odd.
Yeah,
timing is odd.
I'm sure you'll mention this at 4 o'clock. We're going to talk about it in a little bit with the people. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590 and *590. Their reaction to this move. You'll have Paul Beeston on at 4 o'clock. I think you're a little like me as a host in that you can roll your eyes sometimes when other people in the media or athletes bring up what's a distraction and what isn't.
Yeah.
Because players just play. The game starts. The whistle goes. The puck drops. The first pitch comes. You just play. Can this be at all distracting to a team that is just about to put the cherry on top of one of the best months I think you and I have ever seen in baseball history?
Yeah.
I don't know what to compare this to, certainly in Blue Jays history, let alone an August where a team's got a run differential of plus 89 and they've got a great chance to go 22-5 tonight with David Price on the hill.
I don't think it'll have any impact because Josh Donaldson's not eligible for free agency. He's here for a few more years. Doesn't matter who the president is. Batista and Encarnacion, they're under contract for next year. Russ Martin is the long-term contract. Mark Burley, Marco Estrada, David Price are the three guys who a quote-unquote decision must be made on whether or not they're going to be back next year. And I mean, David Price certainly didn't wake up this morning and go, oh my God, I wonder, do I still like Toronto now that Alex Anthopoulos may not be here? That Mark Shapiro is going to be here. I don't think it'll have the slightest impact
on this team. Although, I really don't.
I don't either. One of the first questions for Shapiro will be, how do you feel about going past 5 years in the contract? Because
I was trying to take a look. I think the Indians did go past 5 years when Shapiro was president. And I have to admit, I should have done that when I came in this morning. That is the first question. And it's very simple. If that is a, you know, a decree from ownership, David Price isn't going to sign here because David Price will get 7 years from somebody.
Did they go longer than that? Did they go 5 years on Michael Bourne? I feel like that was a longer-term deal. Swisher was a shorter deal.
Yes.
But their big guys were Bourne and Swisher when Francona first got here.
Yeah, and when and you
looks
know,
like
when,
a four-year deal.
When they had Manny signed and all those guys, that was a John Hart. And I don't even know if Manny had a multi-year deal, but that was a John Hart thing. So I do know this. The Indians have had that. The Indians were kind of the first team to lock up their guys in the first and second year of eligibility to long-term contracts. They were very much at the forefront of that. But that was, you know, before Mark Shapiro was there.
That
is the first question. What happens to the five-year limit? And we can go further. I mean, if there's some doubt as to whether or not Alex isn't back, what does that mean for John Gibbons?
That's true too. That factors in. Swisher was 4 years, $56 million. Bourne was 4 years, $48 million. So he stayed shy of that, but just barely. And the Swisher deal obviously is one that looks a little excessive now, in the free agency market. All right, so you're on 4 o'clock. Coming back in 2.5 hours. Paul Beeston will join Jeff Blair on Primetime Sports at 4. We'll get more of your reaction. Thank you so much for hanging out as well.
No problem. Apparently, Yan Gomes and Jason Kipnis got 6-year deals. That's from Mike Cormack. So there you go.
Old friend Yan Gomes. Okay. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Thanks, Jeff.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So best and worst in about 10 minutes from baseball yesterday. A little bit of a preseason football mention from Saturday coming up in it. And it's a doubleheader on Sportsnet tonight for baseball. Tribe sends Danny Salazar to the Hill. The Blue Jays, David Price. Will this be the least atmospherically or the most atmospherically challenged game for David Price? I understand there's still tickets available for tonight. Maybe they won't hit 40,000. Told the next couple games are touch and go to hit 40, and then basically everything's going to be sold out, starting with Baltimore on a Friday night. Maybe David Price will say, that's the worst atmosphere I've ever pitched in. Not the greatest, the worst. Maybe he won't. Maybe he won't say that. Take it easy. Tonight as well, doubleheader, great series in the NL West. Giants, Dodgers, 10 o'clock start. Jake Peavy goes against Brett Anderson. And a reminder, Paul Beeston will talk to Jeff Blair coming up on Primetime Sports at 4 o'clock. I want to talk about the no-hitter last night on Sunday night. I was off last week at the controversy about Curt Schilling getting lifted from Sunday Night Baseball. They put in Jessica Mendoza, who's a aspiring broadcaster, and to the best of our knowledge, is the first female to sit in the booth for a television network and do color commentary. And I thought she was great. She was a professional softball player. She went to the Athens Olympics. She was a great college pitcher and outfielder. I thought she did fantastic next to John Kruk. Okay? I'm not the biggest John Kruk guy, but I thought Jessica Mendoza was excellent with Dan Schulman. I'm one of the few, I'll admit to being one of the few, who love John Miller. Listen, I'm not going to say anything bad about Dan Schulman. You're not going to trap me that way, because I think Dan Schulman's fantastic. I don't know Dan Schulman. I know a lot of people love to take up for Dan Schulman because he's a great guy, and I think he's a fantastic play-by-play guy. We get to run the games on the radio because we're exclusive rights holder for radio. So he does the games on our radio station and our network, and I think those are fantastic. I didn't like losing John Miller on Sunday Night Baseball. I thought John Miller, I can give or take Joe Morgan, fine. But I didn't want to lose John Miller, who went back to the Bay Area and started working with the San Francisco Giants. But it worked last night with Schulman and Mendoza and John Kruk. Okay? Your calls on Mark Shapiro and your thoughts on this. My thought is this is an excellent hire. I do believe this. I do believe there's more risk, potentially, to lose Alex Anthopoulos. I don't like the sound of that. You don't like the sound of that. But 12 months ago, you might have had an utterly different opinion about keeping Alex Anthopoulos. This is baseball. 2 years ago in Kansas City, they wanted to ride Dayton Moore out of town so fast. Moron, trading James Will Myers for James Shields. What an idiot. It didn't work. It wasn't going to work last year. It wasn't supposed to work. It didn't look like it was going to work to get the Royals even to the postseason, to the wild card game, because they were lengths behind Detroit in the AL Central, or the Comedy Central, as that division's often known, because it doesn't take much to win it. But Dayton Moore, they would have happily drove him to the airport and put him on a flight. Now, guy's made the next 5, 6, 7 years of his job easy based on what the Royals have done in the last 13 months. Maybe Alex Anthopoulos has done the same. What's the worst thing that could happen to the Blue Jays now? Lose the wild card game at home with David Price pitching? I guess that's the worst thing. And then who are the five starter? And then Price doesn't come back. And who are the five starters going to be next year? I promised you a month ago I wasn't going to talk about Price coming back or not coming back. But that is the worst, and I'm not. But that is the worst case scenario. I'm ignoring everything David Price says about it. I'm ignoring everything Blue Jays players say about it. I'm ignoring everything Blue Jays management says about it. Because you have to. There's only one guy who knows, and it's David Price. And he's not going to give an honest answer right now. I think this is a great hire. The biggest knock I've heard against it is, oh, well, how will Alex Anthopoulos feel about it? I don't know. But he cuts players and sends them for assignment and sends them down to the minors and elevates players and then sends them down to... He's used to this. He knows it's a business. He knows it's pretty cutthroat. Get the best person for the job. They'll get, with apologies to the Paul Beasons and Paul Godfreys of the world, they're getting an unbelievable progressive baseball mind as a president. Why would you not want someone who knows as opposed to doesn't know the sport of baseball inside and out to be president of your team? Why would you not want that? Has that ever held up the Blue Jays in the past from succeeding? I don't know. I can't prove it has, but I can't prove it hasn't. Who could prove it hasn't? We don't know one way or the other, but I'd rather have the guy. Imagine in radio or television. I really want an executive that does not know the business. Why? Why would you want that? You can get people who think they know too much about it, and that's fine. Why would my radio boss's program want someone above him who doesn't know radio? There's knowing television, there's knowing, they're two very different things. Anybody in TV and radio could tell you that. You'd want the person that knows the most, and Mark Shapiro knows the most, of anybody they could have brought in here. How it works with Alex Anthopoulos, I don't know. Alex Anthopoulos may not like this idea. Alex Anthopoulos may want out of town based on this idea. We don't know. Jeff in Winnipeg, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Brady and Walker. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, first of all, I'm kind of surprised to hear that news break today. I don't want anything negative with the team headed the next 30 days, hopefully for the playoffs. All that showed me is the ownership of this team only has one outlook on what they're doing at the top and wants it expressed to the rest of the country as far as...
I don't know what that means. What does that mean? Well, I don't know what that means about ownership. What do they want?
I don't want them interfering with the positive that's going on. And right now, that was a big negative to throw that out at this time.
Why would the team start losing games because of hiring a president? What would happen?
What I'm expressing is that there's a lot of players that either just came to this team or are under contract conditions over the next year and a half. I don't need that in their minds that this is going on, that they even have to bring it up in their thoughts, which is in their thoughts today, because they're thinking about what that means to them. Management didn't have to do this, being as far as ownership of this team, but they seem to throw in a negative into something that we are absolutely hoping that they can get into the playoffs. And again, I don't need a negative. That's a negative. As far as who this guy is, we've got a guy that made fantastic trades. We don't need somebody being able to even question that. We've got a guy leaving now, Mr. Beeston, at the end of this year. We're going to go from a positive of what he's brought to our team to a negative. I don't care who he is. It's a negative position to what Mr. Beeston presented to us. So we're headed for a lot of news stories on that. But again, putting it at this time before the public, I don't like that.
Okay, that's fine. I don't think it's got any... I can't disagree more. I can't think it's got anything to do with how Josh Donaldson's going to step into the box tonight and try and tear the cover off the ball, or David Price to get on the hill and throw strikes and get out of innings. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. You know what? This could happen, right? They could lose the game tonight. David Price could lose a start. Like, sooner or later, I said to somebody yesterday, I felt like there'd be a three-game losing streak. And then I started to question myself just because it's been – August was so incredible. We don't know what to compare this to. It is a – it's an unnatural high that this team has put the whole city on and obviously the whole country because there's only one team to follow. Glenn, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like it, unlike the other guy. I think he's young. He knows the game. He's going to do things that are – new and progressive, and it'll be good for the team. Thanks
very much. I concur. I don't think it'll affect anything to do with on-field performance. I think you're going to get a guy in a president who is chomping at the bit to be part of a fan base that's electrified by the team. And Jeff Blair was in earlier. He'll be on back at 4 o'clock with Paul Beeston, the outgoing president. And noted, Cleveland had a bit of a renaissance, right? Terry Francona comes in. They sign Michael Bourne. They sign Nick Swisher. Now, those things didn't work out quite the way they planned. Those guys haven't been elite free agents or even second-tier free agents. And they had players leave who were very good, who went elsewhere. They didn't get much for. Shin-Soo Chu left the Tribe. Johnny Peralta was basically pushed out of Cleveland. Well, he had a lot more good years left. Ask the Tigers, ask the Cardinals. Shapiro hasn't done everything right in terms of player personnel, but he also has been working with a bottom five payroll, bottom 10 payroll. How many people would call this radio station as recently as 4 years ago and say, our payroll? People still call and they don't think the Blue Jays are spending enough money. They'll defend Anthopoulos, but say, we haven't been spending enough money. I'm telling you, I don't know how many markets you'd get a fourth crack at a top 10 payroll as a general manager. Without any playoffs. It doesn't matter what division you're in. This division myth was gone and buried the second the Tampa Bay Rays made the playoffs, and certainly when they made the World Series, and certainly that the Orioles have made the playoffs two of the last 3 years with a bottom 10 payroll, about 19th or 20th. One more quickie on this, then we'll do best and worst. Jeff in Fergus, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, sir. Just a quick point. I really think that this is okay. It's a good move. I really think that if Anthopoulos walks at the end of the year, that's going to be okay too. There's going to be another Anthopoulos come along. There might be a Ricciardi or a Gord Ash in between, but general managers will come along to do their job. I think that Toronto, in all honesty, I'll be quick, but mm-hmm. I think that Toronto, in all honesty, the reason that they're so concerned about getting a president right now is because Beeston's been in there for 20, 30 years. That guy, when he picks up the phone and he calls somebody in another baseball organization, even though he's not a general manager, that guy, just because if they got a caller ID, they see Beeston, Tom, Paul on the phone, they're going to pick up because that guy's got good relationship skills. Same with Shapiro.
Yeah.
So Toronto's got a little bit of leeway here with experienced people being able to actually get things moving instead of a young guy coming in and trying to make amends, trying to get himself established. They've got an experienced guy that could pick up the phone and say, listen, this is what we're doing here in Toronto. I've been here for 20 years, you know.
It seems to matter to people. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. It seems to matter to people about the contacts and the size of somebody's Rolodex. I tell you in this case, Mark Shapiro's Rolodex probably outdoes both Beeston's and Anthopoulos's. I don't think that means anything in terms of putting a baseball team together and wins and losses. It hasn't in Cleveland. But again, the Jays have spent about, what are we talking, $40 million more than the Tribe has the last two or three years? So, but Shapiro knows everybody, and everybody knows him, and everybody respects him. He's unbelievably well-respected. Alex Anthopoulos is too. I'm not saying he isn't. And Paul Beeston's been around the league a long, long time. But you can't get a more experienced president who knows everybody. Terry Francona came to Cleveland to work for Mark Shapiro when he could have gone anywhere else. And he knew the team wasn't going to spend a ton of money. He knew there wasn't an Albert Bell and a Robbie Alomar and a Manny Ramirez sitting there, or a Cliff Lee or a CC Sabathia. And he decided to go there. Let's do best and worst before the 2 o'clock.
Best.
Mark Shapiro.
Yeah, that seems
and
sure.
And worst.
Raisin Pie.
With Brady and Walker.
I don't even know if you can buy that. I'm being serious. I don't know where you would buy a raisin pie. I can't get it at Sobeys, I wouldn't think. Is Metro different than Sobeys? I don't think you do that. Best win, best player, worst loss. You can't win anything. It's just something we do. Best player goes to Jake Arrieta. He was fantastic last night. I mentioned that game Jessica Mendoza was part of calling. Jake Arrieta, 9 innings pitched, no hits. It's the 6th no-hitter of the year. Do they mean quite what they once did? I'm going to tell you no, but everybody gets excited for it. And he was dazzling last night. This wasn't some Edwin Jackson 7-walk no-hitter. Hit a walk and 12 strikeouts. The only Dodger to get on base was Jimmy Rollins, and he almost had a chance to end it. Rollins did in the ninth inning. Adrian Gonzalez was on deck when Chase Utley struck out. Side struck out in the ninth inning. Arrieta was fantastic. Worst player is another Jake. This could be all Jake day on Brady and Walker. Let's talk about Jake from Melrose Place in a little bit. Brooding or a savvy businessman? Worst player was, you got to find somebody from the Yankees 20-run barrage, and it wasn't difficult to do to find a reliever, because that became a game again. It was 7-5 in the sixth inning, but Jake Brigham came in, gave up 8 earned runs. He gave up 9 hits and 4 walks in an inning and 2/3. And then the aforementioned Edwin Jackson came in to have a spotless ninth inning. Yankees beat Atlanta 20-6. Best win, the Washington Nationals. And stay with me for a sec on this one. I'm not thinking the Nats are going anywhere. And they had to get a bailout of another lackluster Steven Strasburg performance. You know Steven Strasburg, the greatest thing ever in pitching. He's going to just have ERAs under 2 for like 8-9 years in a row. I think he's going to have about a 4.40 ERA this year. But the Nats had to win, had to come back, and had to beat the Miami Marlins, the worst team in the NL East. And they did, 7-4. Strasburg left after 4 innings of 4-run ball. Doug Fister came in and got the win in relief. He's trying to work his way back, going into a contract year after a terrible season and not doing great. And worst loss, let's give it to the Green Bay Packers. They lose 39-26 to the Eagles, but they lose Randall Cobb to injury as well. On the heels of Jordy Nelson, they say Cobb's likely going to be okay for week one. We shall see. It's Brady and Walker. 2 o'clock hour is next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.